Some say COVID-19 was an act of nature. Others say it was an accident. And still others say it was an act of war. And so today we pile on to ask, did the University of California fund the development of COVID-19?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with your host, Michael Olson. And now get ready for 1 hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 1279th edition of the Food Chain Radio Show and podcast. Or hey, perhaps you're tuned in on the internet down there in Ushuaia, Tierra del Fuego. And if you are, welcome aboard. Folks, not knowing the who, what, where, why, and when of COVID-19, most everyone speculates. Some say a plain old coronavirus living deep inside of a bat, which is living deep inside of a cave, deep in China, suddenly was transformed by an act of nature into a SARS-CoV-2 coronavirus that eats people alive. At the time that happened, the poor terrified bat flew 1,000 miles to the Wuhan wet market, where it landed with a splash in a bowl of soup, whereupon it was eaten by a hungry patient X, who then stumbled out into the street where he, or she, sneezed into the crowd. And thus began the worldwide COVID-19 pandemic of 2020, which rages to this day, even though we're well into 2021. But others say, no. The bat virus, without the bat, gained a function that enables it to eat people alive while hanging out at the Wuhan Virology Institute. Whereupon, a distracted grad student picked it up off a lab beaker and carried it to an after-work meetup at a Wuhan disco where, feeling very expansive, he or she passed around complimentary shots of Baijiu to a bunch of soon-to-be Typhoid Marys. And still others say it was a carefully planned militaristic operation with zealous religious overtones, carried out by a special unit of the Chinese People's Liberation Army with the expressed intent of destroying the American economy and getting rid of that mean old President Donald J. Trump. To do so, the unit misted the world's biggest potluck dinner with a man-eating COVID-19 virus, closed Wuhan's domestic air terminal, and then opened up the international terminal, and then, after achieving its core mission, sat back in total denial. Well, there really is no answer as to the who, what, where, why, and when of the COVID-19 pandemic. We really should try to find one, though, as there may be many more man-eating coronaviruses in cold storage just waiting to plague us again. We begin our attempt by placing on the table what we hope will be taken as a very serious question. Did the University of California fund the development of COVID-19? Who better to ask than Alexis Baden-Mayer, who is the political director of Organic Consumers Association and the author of a white paper series entitled Gain of Function, Hall of Shame. Alexis, welcome to the Food Chain.
Oh, so great to be with you, Michael. I love that intro.
Well, it's kind of what I've been reading. There seems to be three different ideas as to where the coronavirus came from. Do you know of any more than that?
Well, actually, there is the idea that the U.S. government brought it into Wuhan to the World Military Games. That, you know, this is not a theory that I am partial to. And actually, this week, I just got duped. I bought a book, what I thought was a book online by George Webb about this, because something crazy did happen. So the story is that perhaps it... soldiers were vaccinated in Fort Belvoir, and then they went to the Wuhan military games, and their vaccinations were faulty in some way that made them sick, and it created a communicable disease that sparked the pandemic. That's my understanding of that theory. But when I went searching for news on a recent occurrence that happened at Fort Belvoir, which is actually where I was born. So this is one of the reasons why I was so interested in this particular theory. Two doctors who, well, actually a doctor and a nurse, were shot in their front yard, and they both worked at Fort Belvoir. And this happened in the neighborhood where I grew up. So I really wanted to learn more about it and see if maybe there was something to this whole theory about the World Military Games and the U.S. Mm-hmm. having some sort of intentional release there, or a vaccine accident.
So that would
and
make...
And unfortunately...
So there,
yeah, that's a fourth.
So there's a fourth. Oh, good. Well, you
it's
know...
Not very credible.
Not very credible. But your piece outlining the gain-of-function food chain, what I call the COVID military-industrial complex, was credible because you put numbers with it and you made the connections. But I have to ask... Why was that job left to the political director of the Organic Consumers Association? Where was the New York Times and the Washington Post and NBC and CBS and ABC and PBS? Where's our media? Why did they leave that job to you, Alexis?
Well, there was a tremendous amount of censorship. Google has been censoring this issue. U.S. Right to Know is an allied organization of ours that started doing reporting on this issue of the origins of COVID and the lab engineering of viruses, of potential pandemic pathogens. They started doing this at the beginning of November, and they saw their Google rankings drop to basically flatline immediately after they started talking about the origins of COVID. Mm-hmm. And now Google is funding an inquiry into the origins of COVID at the University of Virginia's Miller Center. It is headed up by Philip Zelikow, who had been the CEO of the 9/11 Commission. It's called the COVID Commission Planning Group. And Google is funding this, and Google was also suppressing the lab origins discussion as of 2020. So I think that we've got a problem there. And I think that's why we're not getting news out.
So, and that's not all, but Google is actually funding some of the gain of function research early in the game. So Google is not only censoring everything, but it's is part of the news that's being censored. So it goes round and round and round. So before we get into the military-industrial complex of COVID, let's start with gain of function. Now, I road tested the expression, thinking that for sure everybody knew what it meant because it's been in the news, or at least in front of me. But then I realized that it's in front of me because I've been looking, and most other people have not been looking. And they look at me and when I say gain of function, and they go blank. What do you mean by gain of function?
So another way people have talked about it, Senator Rand Paul called it souped up viruses. And at the Center for Food Safety, our allies there, Andy Kimbrell, called it gain of threat. And basically, the easiest way to think of it is that scientists take viruses that are currently not harmful to humans at all. Most typically a virus that only exists in animal populations. And they take this virus into the lab to see how they can take something that doesn't hurt people and manipulate it so then it does impact the human body. Or they take a virus that already impacts humans and makes it more transmissible. So a nice scary example that I know the U.S. military has been working on is trying to get Ebola to be airborne. Right now, Ebola is only transmissible through bodily fluids. So it's mostly the handling of people who have died from Ebola. And that's a prime way for Ebola to be transferred from person to person. And so it's not really transmissible very easily. And it's pretty easy to create protocols where people are not handling bodies of Ebola victims without the proper protection. So it can be contained and controlled. Imagine if Ebola were airborne or contagious the way the coronavirus is contagious. Then we have a horribly deadly pandemic on our hands. And this is exactly the type of research that falls under the category of gain of function.
And another expression I've heard used to describe gain of function is simply weaponizing. So you're taking something that's harmless and giving it a weapon that makes it harmful. Now, I kind of understand why the military would be messing around with that kind of stuff, because that's what militaries do. But why is Google messing around and everybody else? So let's see if we can come to grips with the business model here, that it doesn't quite make sense. So why are we giving these harmless viruses a weapon with which to attack us?
Well, sometimes viruses do leap from animals to human beings. The bird flu is a very good example. Poultry workers and people who handle avian livestock do regularly get bird flu from birds, right? Mm-hmm. And so the concern is that you've got this virus that is making the transition to human beings, and that it will naturally eventually gain this function of being able to be transmissible between human beings. And if we don't do this in the lab first, we won't be prepared for the next pandemic. So that was the logic of it. But I think what's happened is it's gotten way, way out of hand. And so, the reason why we're talking about this today is because it is actually very likely that the coronavirus pandemic was started because of a lab accident, or worse, at a laboratory where their business model was collecting viruses from bats in caves 1,000 miles away in Yunnan, China, in a very remote rural area, and taking these viruses back to the laboratory to see if you could make, basically new versions of SARS. There was a SARS pandemic, obviously, not quite a decade ago, not quite two decades ago, 2003 and 2004. And the theory about that is that it actually was from bats. Now, I'm not sure if I believe that anymore now that I've done so much research, because the same scientists that are suspect in an event that happened in Wuhan where a virus emerged from a laboratory, those very same people are the ones who told us, we found the origin, the animal origin of SARS, and it's over here in a bat cave very far away from Guangdong where SARS originated. And so, the story about the first SARS was that it was civet cats at a wet market, and that the civet cats had somehow gotten a bat virus.
And it worked once, and the story worked once, so we got it again. But somehow it's just not ringing true this time. Folks, we're going to take a quick break. Michael Olson with Alexis Baden-Meyer, who is the political director of the Organic Consumers Association and the author of the series Gain of Function, Hall of Shame. Right back.
now, back to What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, hello, folks. You know, back in 1961, when President Dwight D. Eisenhower was timing out of his term as President of the United States, he said to the American people, beware of the military-industrial complex. We didn't. And now we're living with a very interesting military-industrial complex built around coronaviruses. And once we start peeking into the windows of that military-industrial complex, you're going to be really amazed at who you see running around the halls. And that's what Alexis has been doing for quite a while. And she's cataloged those people and what they're doing and the money they get. But before we introduce them, I'd like to ask, how do they go about turning a garden variety coronavirus into a man-eating microscopic monster? What do they do, Alexis?
Well, there are a couple of different ways. You know, we were thinking it must be genetic engineering because, you know, that's our business. Organic Consumers Association runs the Millions Against Monsanto campaign, and we've always been concerned about the use of genetic engineering in food and agriculture. But there's a traditional way that this has been done that doesn't require genetic engineering, but usually it's done along with genetic engineering. It's called animal passage or cell passage. And the traditional way to do this is you take, say, you take animal tissues or a live animal, and you run the virus through the animal tissues or the live animal. So in this instance, in coronavirus, what it looks like was done is that there were humanized mice that were given a SARS-like virus, and through passaging the virus through the humanized mice, it took on this gain of function of this super ability to attack certain cells within our bodies, the ACE2 receptors. And this particular virus has a furin cleavage site that is unique amongst all coronaviruses. And it has never existed before. And that's another reason why people think that this virus came from a laboratory rather than through an animal naturally.
Nobody's ever seen one before. Nobody can find one. And so they look at it and say, this is a novel coronavirus. It's new and nobody's ever seen it. It's novel. And so, wow, here it is. And through a humanized mice, and we're shortly going to get to meet the man who made those humanized mice. So let's look at the, first of all, I'm sensing that there's some opportunity for some spectacular big money involved in this business of coronaviruses. Am I wrong?
No, I'm afraid you're right. And so there's a lot of government funding. After 9/11 and the 2001 anthrax attacks, there was a tremendous amount of funding towards biodefense research. And one of the things that made Anthony Fauci a kingmaker at NIH in his role as the director of the National Institutes of Allergy and Infectious Diseases is that he was skillful in getting that new pot of money post 9/11 shifted towards traditional science. And his, you know, a lot of people at the time said, you know, we don't like our science, microbiology, being shifted so far towards military research. We would like to do civilian research. We're not that interested in biodefense. We don't think it's very important. And we think there's an overemphasis on it. And his response was, well, look, you guys should just be happy to get the money because otherwise it would have gone to the Pentagon, not to NIH. And so that's the origin of this recent explosion mm-hmm. of funding for the weaponization of viruses, which I think, as you mentioned it before, I think that's a very apt term for what we also call gain-of-function research. But now I think that, you know, I'm cynical enough to believe that people in the pharmaceutical industry are also somewhat excited by the prospect of new viruses hitting the world stage and having new opportunities to create vaccines and antiviral medications, certainly not the off-patent old medications. We don't want those. But if there's anything new and patentable that pharmaceutical companies can make money off of, I think that they've been, you know, at the very least, sitting on their hands with excitement, waiting for the next pandemic as a business opportunity. And so I think that's another reason why we're seeing investment in this area, especially when you think about people like Mark Zuckerberg, you know, Bill Gates. Why are they interested in this?
Amen. Now, there was something else that happened way back in 1980, I think it was. Congress passed an act called the Bayh-Dole Act of 1980, in which universities and university professors would have the ability to cash in on government-sponsored research. So we taxpayers pay these universities to research things, and if the professor makes a discovery and is able to cash in on that, the university gets money, the professor gets money. So there is the opportunity here in this. We're not saying anybody's doing it, but there is the opportunity to create a virus that'll spark a pandemic, and there is the ability to make a vaccine that will stop it. Is that what I see?
Yeah, honestly, that's what I see. I mean, I hate to think that it's actually, you know, that they are cognizant of that, that they would be doing it consciously and with purpose, but I can definitely ascribe to the idea that that's why we're seeing the reckless funding of extremely dangerous research. The USA Today did a really good series of articles. I believe Allison Young was the reporter on these, where she showed that if you look at the record of lab accidents, we're having, I forget exactly what the figure was, but it was so regular, like once a week or twice a week, something on that level, where it's just happening all the time. And actually, if you do news searches of what was happening in China, you know, right before the pandemic emerged in Wuhan, you see that there were accidents at vaccine manufacturing plants. The Brucellus vaccine was implicated in an accident at a vaccine manufacturing plant. So, you know, you either just start to expect that these industrial accidents will happen regularly, and then you prepare to capitalize on them when they happen. Okay. That's the best case scenario, sadly, in my opinion.
Okay. Now, let's introduce some of the characters here. And I would like to start with what looks to me like a nexus of this military-industrial complex in the person of one Peter Daszak, who is the president of a nonprofit organization called Eco Health Alliance. Now, I say nexus because he seems to be a money guy, a bundler in the political sense, in that he goes out and gets money from people who have it to give and then distributes it to people who can do what they are told to do with it. Is that right? Is that about right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. There's a good record of this. I use a search service called GovTribe. And according to their database, EcoHealth Alliance, since 2003, has gotten $109 million to do this risky virus hunting and virus manipulation research.
So they have this nonprofit organization that calls itself EcoHealth Alliance, gets $100 million to go out and weaponize viruses.
That's right, and they're right at the center of this scandal. And the funny thing is that I was not somebody who was really hyped about the lab origins in early 2020. My boss, Ronnie Cummins, who ended up writing a book with Dr. Joseph Mercola, The Truth About COVID-19, Ronnie was really interested in this. And you know, I didn't see it as very well related to our core issues at Organic Consumers Association. And I was very skeptical. And Ronnie said, you know, it's like, look, they genetically engineered viruses. This happens. And even if that wasn't what caused the pandemic, it could cause a pandemic. And this was something that I just didn't know anything about. But Ronnie has worked on the genetic engineering issue a lot longer than I have. And prior to Monsanto commercializing recombinant bovine growth hormone, the first commercialized genetically engineered product, which happens to be for the food industry, what scientists were mainly concerned about with GMOs was the military applications and the manipulation of potential pandemic pathogens.
So Ronnie, go ahead. You know, Ronnie and the Organic Consumers Association is very concerned about the food we grow to eat. But here's a situation in which the things we grow are eating us.
Yeah. And so honestly, I wasn't looking. I did not want to do research on this lab origin theory of the coronavirus pandemic. But what Ronnie asked me to do specifically, because I'm the political director, I'm a lawyer, he said, I just want you to go find out how the U.S. government is regulating this. And when I started looking into that single narrow issue, I immediately found Peter Daszak. And I immediately saw that he had been in the news around the origins of coronavirus. And right then I realized that Ronnie was on the ball and had pegged this correctly.
Now, when this situation first broke, I had a fellow on who's from New York, and he's an artificial intelligence specialist. And what he did is he went on a search for the photograph that the Chinese Communist Party released of a bowl of bat soup. And because that was the story, right, that it was a natural transmission of a virus from an animal to a person. And it was somebody in the Wuhan wet market that ate a bowl of bat soup, and that was the story that first came out. So my guest did a search through the internet for this photograph and found it as part of a menu item for an Indonesian restaurant. And looking further, he realized that there was no bats soup being sold in Wuhan. And in fact, the people of Wuhan don't eat bat soup. And in fact, there's no bats there. They're 1,000 miles away. Then Peter Daszak shows up on the scene and fronting for a whole bunch of scientists who signed a letter that appeared in Lancet. And this letter insisted that everybody stop looking at a lab accident because it can't be true. And America's media just shut up because of that letter. And anybody like you who are asking questions simply got shut down by that letter. And it was organized by Peter Daszak. So Peter Daszak and EcoHealth Alliance, how did they get in the middle of the COVID military industrial complex? How did he become the bundler?
That's a really good question, and I don't know exactly how, but one person that I researched that I think probably does know is David R. Franz, Franz, and he worked at USAMRIID, the Fort Detrick bioweapons lab, and he was up to his eyeballs in the controversy around anthrax, although, you know, very few people talk about the 2001 anthrax attacks, which were definitively linked back to USAMRIID by the FBI. So that's the official story, is that this anthrax came from U.S. bioweapons laboratories. But when I looked into this, I saw that David Franz, along with Ken Alabeck and Charles Bailey, were ex-USAMRIID scientists who had been given a DARPA contract from the Pentagon to make gain-of-function anthrax, you know, weaponized anthrax, anthrax that was in little micro-capsules, silicon-encapsulated, you know, very tiny powder-like capsules, so that if you put them in an envelope and rip that envelope open, they would poof into the air and linger in the air, and it would be almost impossible to decontaminate that area, and it would result in sickness and death. So that is exactly what happened with the 2001 anthrax attacks. They were blamed on USAMRIID scientist Bruce Ivins, but it was David R. Franz who had the DARPA contract to manufacture the anthrax that we know was used in the attacks. So he had some involvement, although he's scot-free and nobody talks about that anymore. But I learned about him from Dr. Merrill Nass, who does anthrax, the anthrax blogspot blog, and she researched anthrax going back to attacks in that South Africa may have been involved in back in the day. So, you know, there's a long history of anthrax being used as a weapon. And she was the one who pointed out to me that David Franz was on the EcoHealth Alliance Advisory Board. So you have somebody who is so deep into the U.S. military bioweapons establishment that is advising Peter Daszak at EcoHealth Alliance. And that's why it makes so much sense when you see that, you know, in this last year, Daszak and EcoHealth Alliance have gotten more money from the Pentagon, from DTRA, the Defense Threat Reduction Agency, than any other source. Wow. So they are primarily a biodefense or, you know, bioweapons as organization. A few people talk about that.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break, right back into the fray with Alexis and you. Stay tuned.
You can earn a substantial income by farming for the city. All you need to do is take your crop to market and win the competition for the consumer dollars. There is a well-proven strategy for winning this competition. You will find it embedded in MetroFarm, the guide to growing in or near the city for the city.
Polyface Farms, Joel Salatin.
Few how-to books could be more appropriate for our times than MetroFarm, a truly comprehensive manual. MetroFarm makes the whole embedded food system doable. It's a must-read.
USDA Director Bud Kerr.
Big book. MetroFarm describes the agronomic, economic, and managerial concepts required to generate substantial profits from agricultural locales near metropolitan areas.
Before you plant your seeds, pick up a copy of the Ben Franklin Book of the Year award-winning MetroFarm. Then plant your seeds and win the dollars. MetroFarm.com. MetroFarm.com.
Duke the Pug will soon turn 20, which is pretty good for a dog breed that averages 11 years. When Duke was 13, he lost a lot of hair, had a hard time getting up for a walk, and his bowel movements were not very moving. We started making his food instead of buying it. We cook up a big batch of rice, chicken, broccoli, carrots, and turmeric, freeze meal-sized batches, and thaw them at mealtime. We also sprinkle Arthrodex on each meal. Arthrodex is a complete blend of plant-derived minerals, vitamins, amino acids, and enzymes formulated to make old dogs young again. And it does. Duke the Pug does have his problems, but he has all his hair, loves daily walks, and has no problems with his movements. Breakfast is at 7, and if it's not there by 7:01, we all hear about it. Make your old dog young again. Pick up Arthrodex at NutriensToGo.com. And while you're at it, make yourself young again with a Healthy Body Start Pack. NutriensToGo.com. NutriensToGo.com.
History buffs. This tale from Michael Olson's Tales from a Tin Can took place in Bremerton, Washington, August 1944.
Bremerton was the best Liberty port of the war, and I had a secret weapon for enjoying every second of it. Roller skates. No kidding. Now, right outside the gates of the base was a sailor bar, and almost every sailor would stop right there, but not me. I kept right on going till I get to the roller rink. Most of the guys thought I was nuts, but I wasn't. You see, there was no better way to meet girls than to skate around in a rink in your dress blues. Back in those days, I was limber enough to do tricks like wrapping one leg around my neck while I was skating on the other. Yeah, most of the guys thought I was crazy. They'd see me leaving the base with my skates and just shake their heads, but heck, I laughed all the way to the bank.
Tales from a Tin Can contains 424 tales by 44 sailors aboard the USS Dale, from Pearl Harbor to Tokyo Bay. Order your Father's Day copy at talesfromatincan.com. That's talesfromatincan.com. Talesfromatincan.com.
So much to say.
so little time to say it, on The Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Welcome back. This is The Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson. You know, we usually talk about what's eating what, but today we're talking about what's eating us. And it is that tiny little microscopic coronavirus that somehow ended up polluting the entire world and almost shutting the entire world down for a whole year and making a lot of people sick and killing a lot of people. Where the hell did that thing come from? How did it find its way into the human population? Well, nobody really knows for sure. Some people think it was an accident, that somehow a tiny little microscopic coronavirus inside a bat, inside a cave, inside China, was suddenly transformed into a man-eating microscopic monster. And that's what happened. But other people say, no, it was a lab accident. You know, they've been working on this coronavirus for a long time, weaponizing it and whatnot. So probably just a grad student careless and not washing his hands or her hands and got a bug on their hand and took it out, and there it goes. But, you know, still other people say it was a militaristic operation. It was well planned. It was dedicated to a specific intent of perhaps shutting down the American economy and getting rid of an obnoxious president. Maybe that was it. Who knows? Nobody knows, and nobody seems to want to know. The current administration suggests that it's not going to do anything with China. And in fact, this just in, the National Institutes of Health, under the leadership of Dr. Francis Collins, is funding a Chinese Communist Party-run scientific organization tied to the People's Liberation Army. Emails obtained by the National Pulse through a Freedom of Information Act request show Dr. Tony Fauci was in regular contact with a Chinese Army-affiliated group. And this is just crazy and crazy. It seems like the United States of America is giving the Chinese People's Liberation Army money to study how to give gain of function to coronaviruses that then somehow end up contaminating the world. Do you get that same frustration looking at this that I do, Alexis?
Yes. It gets worse and worse. I just listened to a great conversation. Whitney Webb at Unlimited Hangout had Sam Husseini on as her guest. And they've both written about the military connections to this gain-of-function research on coronaviruses. They were also talking about David R. Franz. And he was actually in Wuhan a couple of years prior to the emergence of this virus. And he was proposing the very same things that you're talking about now. I had not heard this latest news that this has been better documented. But clearly, they're, you know, it's really terrifying to think of the U.S. and China working together on these things and for the militaries of each country to be involved, because that's pretty opaque and we can't ever, you know, I hope that the truth comes out, but it's scary.
So, you know, scientists generally have a rather pure motive, theoretically, that we're going to do this for the betterment of mankind and personkind or whatever. We're going to discover how to give coronaviruses additional capabilities so that if it happens in nature and spills out and creates a pandemic, we will have models on how to deal with it and can therefore make a vaccine that can stop the pandemic before it wreaks havoc. So that we've been working on weaponizing coronaviruses for so long, it would seem that we would have already had a vaccine ready to go. Why didn't we, Alexis?
Yeah, because because this logic doesn't act. It sounds good, but it doesn't actually make sense once you think it through. Because whenever, you know, if this, especially if this is a natural virus emerging suddenly, unexpectedly from animals and being transmitted to human beings for the very first time, that means we do not have it in a lab. And no matter how, you know, how diligent you are in creating every possible variation of every virus that you can get your hands on, if it emerges naturally, you're never going to have the right one. And if it emerged accidentally, you know, this one was a novel coronavirus. You know, the scientist who published on this, Xizheng Li at the Wuhan Institute of Virology, had a gigantic database of coronaviruses that went offline right at the wrong moment when the world needed to know what viruses she had in her laboratory.
Xizheng Li was in Wuhan running the lab there, had the database, but turned it off so that nobody could see it except for her and the people that she allowed in. Now, why would she do that when the world was facing this incredible pandemic? Wouldn't you think she'd rather share that information with the world?
Yeah, and it seems that it should be required. Like, you know, if you're going to do this type of research, there must be international relations or international rules that require you to make these databases public. Now, that's not my proposal for how to prevent these things in the future. I think we need to stop gain-of-function research altogether. And there are a lot of scientists saying now, like, oh, yeah, we could just make the scientists, you know, record what they do in the lab better, as if they're not required to do that right now somehow. I don't know. Like, they publish in mainstream journals, like Science and Nature. I don't understand how they can get away with keeping their work secret.
In considering your work on this subject through your white paper series, The Gain of Function Hall of Shame, I get to thinking that the genie's out of the bottle.
Yeah, I mean, it's too late now for the scientists to say, oh, we'll just better regulate gain-of-function research, make it more transparent, make our labs safer. It's too late for that now. It's so clear that this did not come from nature, because we don't have any evidence. And if there were evidence, you know, it's like if the best they had was bat soup from an Indonesian restaurant, then you know that they're never going to, you know, they're not going to have a credible explanation for how this emerged naturally. And then at that point, you know, all you have is whatever evidence we can find of a lab accident. And there are just so many, even within Wuhan, there are so many potential suspects, because you have the Wuhan Institute of Virology, but you also have Sinopharm's manufacturing plant there. So this could easily have been a vaccine trial accident. And there actually are some markers within the coronavirus COVID-19, SARS-CoV-2, that show that there are little bits of other viruses. There was a paper that came out right away, Indian scientists who said that there were bits of HIV in the virus. And that paper was shunned and removed and censored. But since then, there has also been evidence that adenoviruses are in the SARS-CoV-2 virus. So adenoviruses, you've probably heard about them because they're making adenovirus, or not making, they're giving people adenovirus COVID-19 vaccines now. It's a common virus vector used in vaccine production. So this could have easily been a vaccine production accident or a vaccine testing accident. You know, the thing is that we could actually find out. We just need to have China tell us who their first known case of coronavirus was. And right now it's very clear that the earliest cases that were published in the scientific journals right at the beginning of the coronavirus outbreak, those are not the first cases, because those viruses are a little bit too developed to have been the index case. And so there is data on that. They've got it. We just need to get them to give it to the world. And we need the United States to care enough, Biden is supposedly doing a 90-day investigation right now, but we'll see how deep that goes.
Why would China not say, everybody in the world believes that it was not an accident of nature, I think. I guess, though, that Peter Daszak is still saying it is. So, I don't know. It's kind of frustrating. You would think that China would come out and say, well, it was just an accident of nature. Sorry. But it's not saying that. So that leaves us with the most frightening prospect of all, that it was mm-hmm. indeed a military operation designed to take down the American economy and get rid of Trump. So that there is no open flow of information leads to all kinds of speculation.
That's right.
Especially from people like me who are curious and don't believe what I'm told all the time.
Yep.
So let's go back, and talking about not believing people, let's go back to Peter Daszak of Eco Health Alliance and kind of paint a picture of this operation, because Peter is using the ecology as a justification for all of this madness here. But how does he do that? What is his one world health thing?
Yeah, this is interesting, because One Health is a concept that the military uses to describe its own operations as well. So it's lingo that's in the public health sphere, but also the military sphere. And One Health is the concept that we are likely to get diseases from animals. And certainly, I was so susceptible to that argument because I work on factory farms. And I know how disease-ridden yep. factory farms are, and I know about antibiotic resistance and all sorts of problems that create diseases that impact human beings, but they're created in this horrible petri dish of the factory farm. And so it seems very public health forward thinking. You know, it's like, okay, I'm so glad that somebody's finally talking about this, because look at all of these horrible diseases coming out of factory farms. And I know there are great people at Humane Society, Michael Greger, who wrote a lot about this when the bird flu issue gained currency a few years ago. And it's very real. Like that aspect of it is real. And mm-hmm. that's why it's such a compelling story and why you get so many good people jumping on board with that. Like when I started writing about lab origins, I got nasty grams from an allied organization, Center for Biological Diversity. And they, you know, they really like the One Health concept. And I can see why they do, because it is about the environment. It is about human health. And it is about how we're screwing all of that up with deforestation and factory farms.
Yeah, with the very poor way we're treating our earth, animals and people are living closer together. As we get closer together, we're more likely to get more diseases, and so we're in that fix. So we need to come up with these studies that catalog all of these possible diseases. And so that is the principle that EcoHealth Alliance lays on the table when it goes looking for money. And it gets a lot of money from, as you said, the United States government gives it $100 million. But it gets a lot of money from other places, too, like Google, I think, has been funding
Johnson & Johnson.
Johnson & Johnson. So it gets a lot of money from everybody who wants to play the game. It seems like everybody with a few extra quarters in the piggy bank wants to play this game because of the potential for very, very, very big money. Now, you make note of one famous American in this COVID military industrial complex, who did very good with the pandemic. And as a matter of fact, in the first 6 weeks or so of the pandemic, his personal fortune increased by $20 billion. And who would that be?
Bill Gates. And that's the first 6 months.
It took him 6 months.
Okay.
It took him a little while. And so everybody's looking at this and thinking, there's a big money. If we can, like, if we can get a hold of being in front of a disease and make a vaccine, we're going to make a lot of money. Now, we're not the only ones thinking that way, of course. The Chinese military is thinking that way, too, because when this whole thing first broke out, and you look into the ownership of who controls the Wuhan Virology Institute, well, it's the Chinese military, and it's the leadership, the former leadership of the Chinese Communist Party is owning the biotech industry that's feeding off of Wuhan's research. So the former CCP people are owning the Chinese vaccine that's being distributed around the world. So we're talking huge, huge, huge money. And wow, it just goes on and on. Well, folks, I just ran out of time. But fortunately, Alexis is going to join us next week as we look into the military-industrial complex. And I promise we will answer the question, did the University of California fund the development of COVID-19? Thank you very much, Alexis. See you next week. Appreciate your being with us.
Thanks, Michael.
All right.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Radio show with Michael Olson. And if your friends missed the show, tell them to log on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with its farmer's face on it and live.